Welcome to The Final Cut. This week, the Irish and the Catholic Church. In the wake of the sex abuse scandals, a new film starring Brendan Gleeson as a country priest looks at the frayed relationship between the clergy and their flock. I'll be talking to the writer-director John Michael McDonough later about this and why he chose to explore this territory as a black comedy. But first, to Jersey Boys, the story of Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, an unashamedly populist, cliché-ridden treat.
I don't get it.
What don't you get, Tommy?
The title, Walk Like a Man.
So?
As opposed to what, a woman?
No, it's for boys, Tommy, teenage boys. We're telling them to act like men.
Instead of like girls.
Yeah, instead of like boys. Come on, why are you doing this?
Hey, Miss Congeniality, it's a metaphor. It's an anthem for every guy who's ever been twisted around a girl's little finger. And if I'm explaining that to you, we're in trouble.
Walk like a man. Take one.
I wasn't overly familiar with the music of the Four Seasons or their story before I came across Clint Eastwood's new film, but I was aware that Jersey Boys was an adaptation of the hit Broadway musical of the same name. So I prepared myself for a big dollop of syrupy melodrama. How the film crept past my critics' scepticism had me reflecting for a while. More of a biopic with musical numbers than a musical where songs drive the plot, Jersey Boys hovers in a sweet spot between nostalgia and exhilaration. It's a movie about the joy of creation, undercut at every turn by regret and guilt. A film with a very Catholic sensibility, you might say, about four Italian-Americans from one of those blue-collar ethnic ghettos where mothers serve spaghetti and meatballs for dinner, or maybe a plate of pasta fazzole. These four are a mix of contrasts. They're average-looking guys, two of them have criminal records. And yet on stage, dressed in finely tailored show costumes, they create a vocal sound that's so delicate and commanding that it's almost heavenly. At the centre is Frankie Valli, real name Francesco Castelluccio, all 5 foot nothing of him, with an exploding pair of lungs and a jaw-dropping falsetto. Suddenly, classics like Walk Like a Man and Big Girls Don't Cry sound fresh again. And you can't help thinking, these guys sung this? Though the music is a revelation, in a sense the film doesn't quite do full justice to the power of the sound, especially live. A quick browse through archival footage on YouTube will prove that. Eastwood simply doesn't display the explosive power as a director. But he does capture the effort involved. Watching the four of them sing, play their instruments, and execute convoluted dance steps in unison is a spectacle that transcends story or plot. The appeal is gut level, like watching someone on a tightrope. These guys are sweating. Eastwood plucked most of the main cast from the original stage play, including lead actor John Lloyd Young, who looks nothing like Valli and lacks a bit of grit in the voice but has a presence of his own. Boardwalk Empire's Vincent Piazza, meanwhile, is the most memorable. Playing Tommy DeVito, the band's self-appointed leader in the early years, he channels a charismatic small-town bravado that begins to transform into frustration. Fame is a hard taskmaster and some buckle under the pressure. The plot to Jersey Boys is what it is. There are the inevitable marriage breakdowns, the falling outs and betrayals. From time to time, characters break the fourth wall to tell us why they did this or that. Part self-justification, part confession. Everyone, it seems, has a reason to feel guilty. As things fall apart, the Jersey Boys rise above their bitter feuds and stand up for each other. Well, of course they do. They believe in brotherhood. A bit like the mobsters who hang around in the background of this story. Christopher Walken, by the way, plays the boys' underworld benefactor, Gyp DiCarlo. Miscast as an Italian, I think, but somehow not a disaster in the role. It's all a bit of a sideshow of cliches and stereotypes, and yet the film charms you. It's the appeal, perhaps, of the underdog. Jersey Boys is the story of how Italians went from ethnic outsiders to mainstream Americans. It's about poor guys who became rich. It's about delinquents who ran away with the circus. But in the end, was it worth it? Well, for a sweet, melancholy moment, the film raises this question and lets it hang. You reflect on all the sacrifice and the personal tragedy you've seen in the story. Who can be sure? And then the triumphant finale rolls out and you're tapping your feet again. You know you've been manipulated by a string of old tricks, but yes, it was worth it. And I'll put a link to a 2011 video of an interview Frankie Valli gave to Fran Kelly on RN Breakfast on the Final Cut website. In the Irish film Calvary, a small town priest, played by Brendan Gleeson, receives a death threat in the confessional. It's from one of the congregation, and he gives the priest a week to live. It's an arresting start to this black comedy from John Michael McDonagh, the Irish-English writer-director of the indie cop film The Guard, which also starred Gleeson alongside Don Cheadle. The priest doesn't run to the cops. He confides in the local bishop, who offers little help, it must be said. Then he continues about his business as normal, visiting parishioners, offering spiritual advice and social assistance. We don't know who the man making the threat is. We don't see him in the confessional in that early scene. And working him out is a little like a whodunit in reverse. Then, a surprise. The priest's daughter arrives. Yes, daughter. And a further dimension to his character slowly unfolds. Shot amidst the green hills and cottages of County Sligo, Calvary is the portrait of a society grappling with its relationship to the Catholic Church. The townsfolk are far from salt-of-the-earth believers. Some of them are mean. Some are nasty. The recent child abuse scandals hang in the air like the death threat at the beginning of the film. How does a man carry out the role of a cleric in a society that has become suspicious and even antagonistic to his church? With a cast of well-known Irish comedians, including Dylan Moran and Chris O'Dowd, the film explores this question in a way that's grimly comic. Gleeson plays it straight, though, with a screen presence that's physically and morally like a rock as a storm gathers around him. He's far from a model priest, but he is a sincere spiritual seeker. And so is McDonagh, you get the feeling. And this sharp film offers much to think about. Calvary is rated MA. Coming up, John Michael McDonagh.
Just when I thought I had you back, you were ship-shape and raring to go. Go you did. I thought it would be another woman.
I have a vocation. I wasn't trying to escape.
I know that. I know you're sincere. But Dad, the fact remains. First Mum went away, and then you went away. I lost two parents for the price of one.
Are you a Catholic yourself? Are you practicing Catholic?
I was made to go to the Mass every week until I was about 14 when my parents left to live in Ireland. So then we could kind of get away with not going anymore. Nowadays, no, I don't go to the Mass anymore.
I guess I'm wondering if this film was partly you working through some issues with regards to your Catholicism.
No, I don't really have a problem with them any more than I'd have a problem with any other religion, to be honest. In a way, this is more an arthouse movie than The Guard was. And I guess my main inspiration early on was the Bresson film, Diary of a Country Priest.
Yes.
So there was that. There's a Jean-Pierre Melville film, which isn't one of his police thrillers, called Leon Morin Pretre. Jean-Paul Belmondo is a very attractive, charismatic, good priest in a small town who, you know, one of the women in the town falls in love with him. So I watched that as well. But I didn't really go back, you know, to the Bing Crosby stuff and or Pat O'Brien, all that kind of stuff. One of the impetuses for making a movie was I thought there was going to be a lot of movies about these sorts of scandals coming out, you know, and I thought we'd get ahead of the game and we'd flip it on its head and we'll do, instead of doing a film about a bad priest, we'll do one about a good one.
Surrounded by bad people or very flawed people.
Surrounded by bad people, yeah. So you try to flip it on its head. But strangely, there haven't been that many movies dealing with all those kinds of issues. Maybe it's like, Vietnam, where the war had to be over for 10 years before people started making good movies about it.
Well, perhaps it is. And the thing that strikes you at first is that you're not really sure if you're in for a light comedy or not. I mean, well, certainly the opening scene in the confessional is very confronting, but already there's a touch of humour.
Yeah, I'm totally, you know, I'm kind of walking a tightrope there, especially if a lot of people are coming to it and they've seen the guard, there would be a tendency with a few of the lines in the opening scene to laugh at them. But then, of course, it gets very dark very quick. But then it flips again, because in almost the next scene, he's with this naive priest, and they have a scene together, which is almost a kind of Lauren Hardy type humour or whatever. So I was, tonally, I was jumping back and forth all the way through, really.
Gleason really holds the whole thing together, and he's got this wonderful, quite understated performance, but it's never dull. There's a real gravitas to it.
Yeah, I mean, he gets very dark and brooding but at times, but then at other times he's quite acerbic and sarcastic to people who are giving him a lot of stick, basically. So, he is an interesting character. He's a priest who, you know, he didn't go straight into the seminary when he was 14 or 15. He actually had a life beforehand. He was married and he had a kid and everything. So he's a much more, I would say, adult or mature representation of a priest than we used to see in, maybe. And he gives as good as he gets in a lot of those scenes. And, you know, it's only towards the end that the narrative, you know, really tries to crush him in a way.
But it's interesting that he physically is a bit like the moral dimension of his character. I mean, he's physically he's a big man.
He looks like he's sturdy. Can stand up for himself. I mean, Brendan does have that in himself, that kind of gravitas. I mean, he brings that to the character, I think. You know, he doesn't really suffer fools gladly. He's a very focused actor.
Two films now that you've done in Ireland, but you grew up the son of Irish parents in South London. Tell me a little bit about your relationship with Ireland and why you're going back again and again artistically.
On a pragmatic level, my brother is Martin McDonagh, who made In Bruges and Seven Psychopaths, but he's also quite, you know, very well renowned as a playwright. So early, he got a lot of success early on with all these Irish plays. So pragmatically, I knew a lot of Irish actors. So when I wrote a film that I was, you know, it was meant to be written within a low budget parameter, and hopefully I'd be given the money to direct it, I populated it with a lot of these Irish actors that I knew, you know, people like Aidan Gillen, who's obviously now quite well known in Game of Thrones and stuff like that. So it was that pragmatic level of, well, I'll ask my friends to be in the movie, you know.
So you had to write an Irish story around
them. So there was an Irish story to set it all off. Plus, I'm a big fan of, you know, those 70s movies in America were all those sorts of location-based movies, those American independents, you know, that they were taking films away from New York and L.A. and they were shooting in the heartland of America. And they always had I felt a very distinct atmosphere. And I thought, well, if I'm going to do an Irish movie, I'll do it where, you know, my parents live. So I know all the locations, and which was in County Galway. And you see, there's a problem with it. A lot of Irish filmmaking, or most of it, is that they basically shoot all the movies in Dublin or around Dublin.
Yes, know? Well, what I loved about The Guard was that linguistically we heard, you know, the Irish language, I mean, which was fantastic. It was set in and around that area where Irish is still spoken as a first language.
Yes, exactly.
That was amazing.
So you have that, and then so you have all these locations that you haven't seen on screen before. And obviously I followed that up with Calvary. My mother was jealous because my father he's from Galway, so she's from County Sligo, so she was jealous of the success of The Guard that it was showing off Galway. And I said, well, when we make the next one, I'll set it in County Sligo. So I had to follow through with that.
And you've got these wonderful helicopter shots, aerial shots of the landscape there.
And the mountain Benbulben, it has a brooding sort of quality. I was trying to,
yes,
you know, the start of The Shining with the brooding helicopter shot over the over the landscape. So I was trying to do that.
You're evoking a bit of that. Well, it does look like there is something, I mean, all landscapes are, by definition, sort of ancient things.
Yeah, but, you're trying to give it a mythic feeling. Yeah,
that's really evoked, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And it's also, I guess it's the, it goes all the way through the film. We keep coming back to that landscape, and it's even in the end titles. We see a lot of the landscape at the end. And I guess it's that sense of, you know, at the end of the day, nature doesn't really care about us. You know, we'll be gone, and nature will continue, and the mountains will still be there after all of our petty squabbles.
Writer-director of Calvary, John Michael McDonagh. And that's the final cut for another week. I'm Jason DeRosso. See you same place, same time next week.